talk for me now?
Testing 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good, I think.
Okay, cool. I've actually noticed when I record myself like that it seems pretty loud. So I don't know if it's just this microphone. It's one of those Yeti.
Yeah, it might be standard. It might just be the mic, but you're not registering too high on the recording. So it may just be the way it comes through when we're chatting and not necessarily the way it's recording.
Cool.
Okay, cool, man. So I got a little kind of question guide here, but I'm going to let the conversation kind of drive it. So good thing is we've got the basics of your story down, and we're going to kind of dig into all of that. And I know you've got a hard stop at 10.
Yeah, ideally, well, I have a meeting at 10:30, so I can go a little past that, but like ideally before 10:30.
yeah, totally. We can be done by then for sure.
Cool.
All right, so I want to start at the very beginning, and I want you to tell me a story of the first business you ever started.
Yeah, so I was really into self-improvement and entrepreneurship when I was pretty young. When I was like 14 or 15, I started learning to play guitar, and pretty quickly after that, when I was in high school, I went to an art school where I studied music, and I started giving lessons to like my teachers' kids and just random people that they kind of connected me with. And I was doing that to make, you know, like, I don't know, like $15 for a half hour lesson or something like that. So that was my first real venture into entrepreneurship, in the sense that I was running everything and making money. And yeah, I did that for quite a while. But that's obviously really hard to scale into a income that you can live off of.
Right. So when you think back to starting a business kind of relatively early in your life compared to a lot of people, did you consider yourself an entrepreneur from there on out, or was that something you had to grow back into over time?
I think I spent a lot of my time, like I think a lot of people, being more of a wantrepreneur. So I was buying all the books on business. I was reading Tony Robbins. I was reading things like Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich. And I was always like dreaming of businesses, but I was at the same time like going to college and working as a waiter at restaurants and things like that. So it was a long time before I did anything other than just like, for instance, doing, you know, something like guitar lessons or something like that. And that really changed when I had been working at a bank for quite a few years, and I was about to get married. And I said, you know, I'm excited to get married, but I have to let you know I can't be a banker forever. So I need to quit this and do something else. And that's kind of when I started to really dabble in like a little more serious entrepreneurship.
Right. But let's go back a little bit before that. And
sure.
You had a love for music, right? And I don't know, where did that start early on in your life?
You know, it honestly, I remember exactly when it started. So I just turned 35, so I grew up like right in the midst of grunge. And I was, before then I was really into like rap music and things like that. And then I remember my dad like trying to get me into Led Zeppelin and the Beatles and stuff like that. And I remember when Kurt Cobain died and he was on the cover of Rolling Stones, like anyone my age or around this age will totally remember that. And I remember reading like on an airplane trip all about him. I was like, well, I wonder what this music sounds like. I had no idea. And so when we got back from this trip, I bought the CD and put it on, and like I was instantly like literally it was like within like 3 seconds I changed from loving like things, you know, rap music and R&B music, to just loving Nirvana and Led Zeppelin and all this stuff. And pretty quickly after that, I bought a guitar, and I lived out in the country, so I didn't have like any neighbors. It wasn't easy for me to go find friends to hang out with without getting a ride from my parents. So I literally, like in the summers and after school, just spent all my time playing guitar and trying to learn how to play different songs and things like that.
That's a pretty good story, just kind of almost happening into a love for that kind of music, and then that leading you to guitar. And that love almost took you to the Berklee College of Music, right?
It did, yeah. So I had originally started, I was like really into drawing, and I remember I don't know if your school had this, but we had like teacher's assistants. Did you ever have those?
Yeah.
So I was one of those for my art class. So I was technically like a teacher's assistant, but what I really ended up doing was he would just let me go off and like, he'd give me different painting projects and I would just do those on my own. And I remember him telling me that they were starting a magnet school, which is, you know, basically a school that like specializes in some sort of thing. And this school was like a magnet school for all sorts of arts. So, you know, music and visual art and film and different stuff. And he said, you know, you should apply to go here. And I applied and I got in on my like painting and drawing skills. But at that point, like that was right when I was getting into music. So once I got in, then I just like, I was still taking the music classes, or I was still taking the visual art classes, but I was really like, okay, I'm kind of here for music secretly. And that's when I really got into it. And that was a good lead up to, I guess that just made me think I was going to be a musician for my life. You know, I spent my entire high school career spending half the day studying songwriting and guitar and composition and working with ensembles. And I figured I would make a living doing music. So the natural thing to do when you're on that path is to go somewhere like Berklee College of Music in Boston, which is, you know, like one of the leading schools in the country, probably the world, for someone that wants to get into pop music or something like that. Quincy Jones went there, John Mayer went there, a lot of different people went there. And so that was the dream. So I applied to go there, got accepted, and like I was like through the roof, like super, super excited. I was like, this is my ticket. Like, this is my ticket to like making a career in music. And I even like got my summer job money and sent it in to like reserve my place, because you have to pay to reserve a spot to go there. And then I started thinking about the price of going, which was essentially, by the time you were done, you ended up spending like, I don't even know, this is probably off, it's been a while since I did this, but I think it was like $150,000. It was some crazy amount, $150,000, some really large amount of money. And I almost did it, but it, like in the back of my head, like I kept thinking, I don't think like learning to play music is the hard part. Like I think anyone can do that on their own. I think the reason people fail in music is because they don't know how to treat it like a business to launch their careers. So at the last minute, I, feeling very kind of like sad about it, decided to study business instead of going to the Berklee College of Music. And I was really sad about that at that time, but it turned out to be a really good decision looking back.
Were there people in your life at that time who were helping you make that decision? Like, can you remember a conversation that you had with someone about this huge decision at the end of the day between going to the Berklee College of Music or going to study business somewhere else?
Yeah, I do. I remember this really distinctly. It's funny that you asked that, because I remember when I was in high school, my parents had always told me, and my grandparents, they said, you know, you work on your grades, and if you get the grades, whatever college you get accepted to, we'll take care of the college. And so when I got accepted to go to Berklee, I was super excited. I was like, oh, this is all taken care of for me. And I remember my dad saying, once I got accepted to Berklee, we need to go, like, let's go out to breakfast. And to me, that was like a code word for like, there's something serious we have to talk about. So I wasn't like super excited about it. So I remember going to IHOP, and I remember sitting at IHOP, and the food hadn't even came yet. And he was like, you know, we can't pay for you to go here. It's just too much money. There's no practical way for us to do it. And I remember at the time feeling like really like, betrayed is too strong of a word, I guess, just feeling like, hey, like I did my part and now I'm not getting this. Like, so that was definitely a part of it. Of course, I could have still gone and just got the loans on my own, but that kind of put like a whole new spin on it. I kind of felt like I was by myself in trying to do that. And I think that made it a little more scary, and it made me have to clarify things in my head more and kind of think ahead more, because all of a sudden it was like more my own money on the line, I guess.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
Yeah, so that's how it changed. Yeah.
I want to go back to a point you made earlier, and you know, it's clear that this love of music kind of had driven you to this point, to this conversation with your dad, but there was this also kind of underlying interest in visual arts and painting, drawing. Where did that come from?
You know, I guess it probably came from just like loving comic books and stuff as a kid. I remember liking, you know, Spider-Man and Marvel comics, and I used to collect Marvel trading cards during recess, and I was really into that and The Simpsons, and I just remember drawing superheroes all the time, and for a while, like drawing The Simpsons all the time. I'm not sure where it came from. I just, you know, a lot of kids get into that. I kind of have always had the kind of personality where when I get into something, I kind of go over the top and like get obsessed with it. And I was just like that kid. Like everyone has either been that kid in some way when they were like in middle school or grade school. And I was just that kid that was really into drawing. So yeah, I don't know where it came from. I just really liked comics and all sorts of stuff like that.
Yeah, it's interesting as we continue to tell your story, how that started so early and how visual arts obviously would continue to be a part of your story over time. But let's go back to this decision to go to business school for right now, because we'll get into all of the design stuff later.
Yeah, sure.
So you have this conversation with your dad and you feel a little bit like, oh man, this wasn't the deal we made. And now I have to make a decision about whether I want to pay to go to this school that's clearly expensive. And right. You end up taking this more practical route. You say, okay, I'm going to go get an education in business. Why did you make that decision?
I think that like a lot of things led up to it. I think that reading all these books on self-improvement and business when I was younger were influencing me. My father was always really supportive of me studying music. So he had like bought me my first guitar. He had paid for a lot of outside lessons, but he also really felt like business was an important part of making a living and that kind of thing. And so I think it was always in my head that I needed to do that. And that just came from my dad, I think, and from reading a lot about it.
So when you knew that you weren't going to go to, you made that decision, you weren't going to go to Berkeley, and you were disappointed, you kind of felt let down by the whole process, but you felt like business could be a good path for you. Where did you go from there? What did you end up doing when you decided to turn down this offer to go to the school you were so excited about? Where did you turn?
Sure, yeah. So I started going to community college. There's a Clark College in where I live in Washington State. And I was just going to get my associate's degree. And at the same time, I started thinking, okay, I got to like learn about business. So how do I learn about business? And at that point, I'd been working as a waiter and kind of like going to school, you know, college part-time. And all of a sudden, I realized I have no skills. Like I can play guitar. And I worked at this Mexican restaurant on the river where like I'd play like, you know, like Mexican songs like and happy birthday songs and wear a sombrero. It was actually really funny because my love of grunge music had brought me to like wearing a sombrero on the river, like singing like songs to people eating Mexican food. But you know, till this day, it was like one of the funnest jobs I ever had. But anyways, like I remember one day it just occurring to me, I was like, wow, like I have no marketable skills, like other than bringing people food and playing music. And then I was like, I think it's probably time that I start learning about business. And being young, I thought that the best way to learn about business, I thought, what better way than working at a bank? Like lots of business happens at banks. So I went and applied at some banks. And I got a job working in a bank as a teller. And at the time, like what I thought was like, well, I'm going to learn all about how to be, I guess, like a businessman, but I'm also going to get to see a lot of like different types of people come in that have successful businesses. And I thought I'm going to kind of get to see an inside view of how successful businesses are run. And that's not really what happened, but that was kind of how I first stepped into business. And at that time I was obsessed with it. So like, not only did I start working as a teller at a bank, but then I had, you know, got my associate's degree and I had started like down the major of studying business admin. So I was just, you know, I was going to my teller job in like full suits, like while everyone else was wearing like polos. Like I was like totally like trying to be a business guy. It was really pretty, pretty funny. I was really into it. I was literally making meetings. Like I made a meeting with the CEO of the bank I worked for, there was a point where like every single person that was like a top level executive, I went out to lunch with them, and even like business people that came into the bank that were doing well, like I would ask if I could take them out to lunch and like talk to them about their businesses. So I was really obsessed for a while with this. And it turned out to be helpful, but yeah, it was pretty funny.
So you're kind of this young, eager, obsessed, you know, you have this like obsessive learning style almost, and you've turned that obsession now from, you know, visual arts to music, now to business. And you've gotten this job at the bank, and you're kind of fascinated by all of these people's story and like how they build businesses and how they've been building their careers along the way. Do you remember one of those lunches that particularly sticks out to you that kind of represents that time?
Yes. Like there was one that was so, well, there was two, and I'll tell you them both really briefly, that were just, they stand out in my mind, and they turned out to be so true looking back in hindsight. So the first was I met with the head of sales for the bank I was working at. And he said to me, I had an idea. I was like, hey, I have an idea for like how this bank can make more money. And I don't remember what the idea was anymore. But I remember he drove down that day because we had a relationship. He was actually mentoring me in the mornings. He drove down to the bank, or the bank I worked at, the branch, that afternoon, and pulled me aside. And he said, Dustin, he said, this isn't the right place for you. He's like, these people are never going to listen to anything you have to say. Like, the bank doesn't care about doing innovative things or trying new things. They care about, I don't want to say the status quo because that sounds like an insult, but I guess they care about, banks are very traditional. They just care about doing what they're already doing and just trying to hit their goals. And I think that was really illuminating for me. And then the most illuminating thing that anyone ever told me was I went out to lunch with a guy who was, he was like in his late 20s, and he was just doing really well, killing it with a software company that he had started selling. I think it was like customer service software. And I remember going out to lunch with him, and he brought me to some golf club like that he was a part of. And I said, we talked a bit about business, and I said, you know, could I, when I have a business idea, can I bring it to you and kind of get some feedback on it? And I remember he said, yeah, like, of course, like, you can call me up about that. He's like, but I don't want to see any of this BS, like, of like a 50-page business plan. He's like, that's a waste of time and that's stupid. He's like, you just need to have like a basic idea, like on like a single page, and then just go like see if it works. And up until then, like, I had thought that I needed like some sort of weird business plan thing. And to hear some guy that was so successful, in my eyes, you know, huge, the most successful person I'd ever met practically say that was like, I think a real light switch was turned on by that.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're kind of this young hustler getting all of the advice you can from all the business people you can find while working at the bank, which is obviously a lot more than your average bank teller is doing in that profession. At the same time, you're getting your bachelor's degree, right?
Right.
So you got a lot going on during this period of life, and you end up spending about 5 years at the bank. And how long after you got your bachelor's degree were you still there?
I would say probably, I think around like 2 years.
Okay. So at the time you're dating this girl, and you come to your own conclusion that's, I don't want to be a banker for the rest of my life. What led you to that decision? And then how did you communicate that to her at the time?
Yeah, so I had been like leading towards that decision for a long time, slowly realizing that there was nowhere I was ever going to go in banking or something like that that was going to fulfill me. And I had picked up, like a lot of people, a copy of The 4-Hour Workweek and read it. And he has, you know, I'm sure you've read that book. He has like a ton of links to different websites, right? So he had links to like Career Renegade and Escape Cubicle. I can't remember anymore the exact name of it, but there's all sorts of links. So that like led me to all these different business blogs. And I think somehow that led me to The Art of Nonconformity. So I was reading this stuff and I was becoming obsessed with it. And like, I was thinking, okay, I want to be a blogger and I'm going to make money like off doing this. I was so inspired by that. And I was trying to do that for like a long time while I worked at the bank, I remember getting up really early every morning and working on my blog. And so I guess I knew I wanted to do that for a long time. And it, by the way, it was like a horrible, horrible failure. Like, I look back at that blog and like it didn't even make sense what I was writing, and I had no I had absolutely no authority or no like there was just no reason I should have been giving anyone advice on anything. Luckily I had no traffic, so it didn't matter. But I knew I didn't want to do it, and I just knew I wasn't happy. And as I was trying to build this blog, like you have to learn, right, like how to use WordPress and how to do this stuff to make your site look good. So I was doing it all myself. So then I got into graphic design because I was trying to make my website look good. So I got into coding and graphic design and stuff like that. And I was dating this girl, and we, you know, like were in love and wanted to get married. And I said, yeah, like, you know, I asked, I think before I asked her to marry me, like we had kind of talked about it, and I had said, you know, yeah, I want to get married, but I just have to let you know that I really have to leave this job because I don't want to end up getting a mortgage and having kids and being trapped working as a banker for the rest of my life because I'm going to be miserable. So I just needed to let you know that because I'll be giving up, you know, my regular income to do that.
Do you remember what she said back to you?
Yeah, she was really awesome about it. She said, that's totally fine. You know, I wouldn't want you to be doing something that you don't want to do for the rest of your life, and we'll make it work. And, she was really supportive of it. So that was hugely valuable. You know, obviously it's so much easier when someone's supportive of you, especially when your lives are intertwined like that.
So was there a moment when you decided, or when you actually quit the bank, or was there overlap between the bank and then when you went back to community college to study graphic design?
No, it was totally cold. It was cold turkey. Like I got married, went on a honeymoon, came back to work. I mean, the balloons were still floating over my desk where like my coworkers had like hung them. And I remember telling my boss that I needed to meet with her, and I told her I was leaving and I was going to go be a graphic designer. And I literally cold turkey left, started, I had already been practicing design before that, but I had like not had clients. I didn't know what I was doing. And yeah, I just went back to community college and I was trying to get jobs doing it. And I was making no money and making a lot of mistakes. And I was in classes with people that were, you know, 7 years younger than me. And yeah, so totally cold turkey.
So when you look back at the 5 years you spent at the bank, what were the big lessons learned from that? How do you think those led you to where you needed to be to get ready to leave?
Yeah, oh, that's a good question. I guess the biggest lesson I learned looking back is no job like that. Like if you're looking for like some gatekeepers to like promote you in some company or something like that and like illuminate you on things or to get you where you want to go, you're really like playing with your career or with just your life in a lot of ways, because they have so many more things. They don't care about your aspirations. They care about meeting their monthly goals, especially in, you know, corporate jobs like this. So looking back, I think one of the lessons I learned was I wish that I had stopped after maybe 1 or 2 years. And I wish that I had started struggling earlier, because I think I thought that somehow I was going to like get like full information by watching enough businesses and being a banker. And I had this feeling that, oh, well, I'm going to learn enough and then I'll just be able to go off and it's just like I'm going to rocket to success. And the truth, from my truth at least, is that you eventually like just have to take the plunge and take a big risk and be willing to struggle longer than most people are willing to. And I wish I'd done that sooner.
So You quit this job that you had been in that was relatively secure, but you also knew was definitely not what you wanted to be doing long term.
Right.
And you go back to community college, and here you are, you know, you're in graphic design classes. There's people a lot younger than you. You're trying to get some gigs on the side while you're doing it. What did that feel like to be back in school after years working at the bank?
Well, it was exciting at first. And then it was weird because there was a lot of people, like, all of a sudden I realized I wasn't, you know, 19 anymore. At this point, I'm like 27, and there's all these 19 and 20 year olds around me. And so I felt old compared to them. And that made me probably go through like my biggest doubtful period of my life. I remember waking up a lot and, or just being in class or just trying to get jobs as a designer and not being able to get them. And I remember thinking, am I the dude that everybody knows that like has like these pipe dreams that are completely unrealistic, but he's totally out of touch with reality? Like, am I the dude? Like, am I that dude in people's lives? Because it seemed like I was doing something so crazy. Like it was almost embarrassing a little bit. So there'd be times, there'd be days when I felt really inspired and like, oh, you know, I'm going for my dream. And then there'd be other days where I would just be burnt out. And I think, boy, like I'm married and I need to be an adult. And I'm kind of like just, I think, living in a dream world. And that was really hard. And I think that's something that we tell ourselves that makes a lot of people stop when they're on the cusp of being successful with what they want to do.
Right. So what was your financial life like during this time? Like, how did you fund this time to go back and start studying what you thought you wanted to do?
Credit cards. So we were operating in the negative. So every month we were having to put stuff on credit cards to pay our bills. Like, there wasn't enough money to go around. And at the time, I think it was so painful to think about that I kind of just like ignored it. Like, I knew we were getting more and more in debt. But I didn't want to hear about it. And I kept thinking that success was right around the corner. And every time I did, it wasn't. And I remember when I found out how much debt we were in, it was pretty painful to hear. I think I had tried to avoid hearing it for a long time.
So how did you eventually find out and kind of come to terms with what the reality was?
Me and my wife were both kind of like just avoiding the conversation. Like, I think that she really believed in me and she believed eventually things were going to work out. But at the same time, I think that she was kind of not wanting to add up all of our debt just in the same way I didn't want to. And I remember when she did, she said, you know, I figured out how much we owe. And I think it was over $35,000 in credit card debt. And I mean, that's a lot for anybody. You know, I'd never had anything close to that. I remember it being so shocking and like seeming so impossible to crawl out of that kind of debt, especially from credit cards, right? With, you know, their interest rates and stuff. And that's how I discovered it. And that was like another low, because that even more reinforced, like, how long will you take your family now down this path? Like, how long are you willing to do that?
Right. And a lot of people would quit right then. You know, they would say, okay, this is crazy. I got to go figure out how to get rid of this because this is going to be too much weight on my shoulders. But you kept going. And, you know, we already know that eventually the tables kind of started to turn. But what was kind of the first break you got along that time, you know, in community college for graphic design? Was there a client or a job or like what came next that started to show that this could work out?
Yeah, so there was two breaks. There was a little break and then a big one. And the little one was I was submitting logo designs for a site called 99 Designs, which is essentially like crowdsourced design. And it's kind of frowned upon in the design community because it makes designers do work for free and compete against other designers with no guarantee of making any money for what they're doing. But at the time, like, you know, at this point, I'm just trying to get my foot in the door. And I remember winning a couple of those contests. And these were contests that would get me anywhere from like maybe $100 to, I think, at the most $500 I would make when I won one. And it wasn't that I really thought that was a sustainable way to make money, but it told me, hey, like, maybe you're good enough at this to do this because you're winning these contests against like hundreds of other designs. So that was a big breakthrough just in the fact that it gave me like more confidence. The next big, oh, and that kind of connects to this because I actually did one of those contests. And it led to a job offer as a designer for a company. And I did end up getting a job working there as the lead designer. And it was in Portland. You know, I live in Vancouver, Washington, and it was across the bridge in Portland, Oregon. And I felt like I'd made it. I was like, I finally made it. This is it. I'm a designer in Portland. Like, that's how I framed it. And it didn't turn out to be that glorious of a job, but it was my first big breaks.
Yeah. So can you remember the conversation when that kind of little job turned into the job offer to become a lead designer?
You mean like with my wife?
Well, the conversation with the company, like, did they reach out and say, hey, we'd like you to come on board full time? Or like, how did that work?
Oh yeah. So I did this contest and, it was basically kind of like, you know, if you win this contest, like there's an opportunity to have a job with us. And I think that's what kind of drew me to it. And it was in Portland. And so it was close enough that it was like reasonable for me. So I won. And then they said, hey, you know, why don't you come in for an interview? And I came in for an interview. And the next day they were like, you've got the job. So you can start in a couple days. And it was as simple as that. And it was a cool job too. Like, there was a lot of really cool perks of it. But there was also some really negative drawbacks of it.
So now you're kind of, I would imagine at this point, you're starting to see kind of the light at the end of the tunnel a little bit. It's like, some of my efforts are paying off. I've got this new job that's using the skills I've been building lately. And you go to work at this company. Was there like a particular story that represents your experience there, or like the skills you started to gain in being a lead designer at the company?
Yeah, well, I think, like, you know, it's funny. So much of this stuff for me, and later on, I guess, like, it'll kind of make sense why this, like, made this expanded even more for me. But a lot of this all came down to breaking through, like, mental barriers in my own mind. And that's exactly what this was in a lot of ways, too. It was like I'd gotten a foothold. It's like I had more proof that I could make a living as a designer. And I thought, well, now I can say I've been hired and, you know, been like a head designer somewhere. And that's going to help me. I had believed that in order to be like own my own design company, I had to work for a bunch of other design companies before I did that, which can be beneficial, but you don't have to do that. But I kind of had this belief that you had to do that. So that was really exciting for me. And I learned a lot about just like working on deadlines. I was essentially hired to like, as like a, this, to work for this sister company of a much bigger company where we were like a little online startup. So I had to make like all sorts of stuff from like, you know, business cards to redoing the logo to making icons to just every single visual thing that had to do with this business I made. And it taught me a lot about working fast, because I had really quick, short deadlines. And it taught me a lot about what was required for printing jobs and for, you know, web graphics and things like that. So it was just like a real life education on how you actually really apply this in a real business.
Right. So it kind of started to take that theoretical knowledge you had been building in through your education to the real world and kind of making it practical and applied.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. That's exactly how it was.
So like banking, there came a time when you realized that even though you were getting a great real world education in how design works inside a company, you were going to move on from this company as well. And do you remember what led to that?
Yeah, I just wasn't happy there. I think the environment wasn't a positive environment for me. I think perhaps some people could thrive in it, but for me, it was just, it felt, I'm sorry, I'm trying to think of a polite way to say it. It just, I don't want to get down too much down the road. I will just say I was not really happy there. And I found the job to be uncomfortable a lot of times. And eventually, even though like I felt like I'd got my foot in the door somewhere and that like I was going somewhere with this, I was not happy. I was more stressed and I was anxious every time I went into work at this particular place. And one day a particular situation happened that, I don't want to go into a ton, but it was just an inappropriate situation I felt like. And I just decided I'm not coming back. And I told my direct supervisor that. And I finished up my work that night and I went home. And, you know, you got to remember at this point, like I wasn't getting paid a ton at this job. This was like my first job doing this. So it's not like we had gotten out of debt or like we were in some sort of good financial situation. But I just told my wife, I said, like, this is a really unhealthy job. And I feel like I learned a lot from it, but I feel like I can't keep going here. And I literally just didn't come back.
And had you told your wife that that was the plan, or did she kind of find out in the same way that your supervisor found out that day?
Well, I think that she knew that for a while that I wasn't feeling it. So I don't think it was a surprise to her. So I think that when I finally said that and I said, I'm thinking about not going back, you know, this is what happened today and I didn't feel comfortable with it. And yeah, so when I did say that, she was like, yeah, well, you know, we got to do what we got to do. And, you know, she's always been really supportive of that. And I guess I can't stress that enough. You know, I think it's easy to take for granted sometimes, but I think about if I had, you know, been with somebody else that was less supportive, how hard that would have been. I might've stayed at that job or I might've stayed at a bank or whatever. And having someone that's in your corner, that's supporting you, that's willing to, you know, believe in you enough to go down that road was huge, because she gave me the validation that, yeah, it's okay to leave that, you know, we'll figure it out. And, at that point, you know, it's easy once you've succeeded to some degree to say, oh, well, that was a good decision. But at the time, you don't know what's going to happen. You know, am I going to end up homeless? Am I going to end up in bankruptcy court? Like, what's going to happen? So it's really amazing when you have someone that's actually supporting you and saying, yeah, we don't know what's going to happen, but let's just do this.
Right. Because you're the character in the story. You're not writing the story.
Exactly.
You are. You're an actor in it, but you're not the one who gets to see the end already.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, I think it's easy once, like, you've had some success to be like, oh, well, like, this was always going to happen. But, like, I have always, like, I always look back and realize that there, for anyone, there's huge degrees of luck that occur in everyone's lives that help them to get to where they're at. I really believe that. And I think anyone that thinks that they're completely in control, like, is at some point in their lives going to be in for some surprises. So yeah, I never forget to take, I was getting off track there. I guess, yeah, like you're exactly right. It's, you're a character and you don't know what's going to happen. And you are, like, although you can do a lot of things to put the game in your favor, you're still at the mercy of, you know, fate or of chance. So,
right. So you let them know you're not coming back, and that was effectively your last day, and you wake up the next morning. What did that feel like?
It felt like maybe I made a really bad decision. It felt really scary. I mean, really, it was kind of just like playing Monopoly and getting put back to go. So I had finally gotten, like, ahead, and then I had sent essentially on my own put myself back at square one again. And it sucked. I just started doing the same thing that I had been doing. You know, I started doing the same things that had gotten me to that place that I had left. And luckily, someone that I had written, that it was a blogger that I really looked up to, a year ago when I was trying to find jobs, just happened to write me back like 2 weeks after this whole ordeal.
So how long were you at the startup as the lead designer?
Not that long. I think it was like, it's hard to know exactly. It was not that long. It was like maybe 4 or 5 months.
Okay. So maybe 6 months prior to that, you had written a number of bloggers, a number of people you looked up to. And that was maybe kind of during that time when you went down that rabbit hole of the 4-hour work week, which led you to a bunch of other resources. And so you had reached out to some of them, right? And why? Like, what was the purpose of you reaching out to all these people? It sounds a lot like you doing what you did while you were at the bank with reaching out to whoever you could to grab lunch. Was this kind of a similar thing?
Yeah, it was. It was. It's funny. I never really thought about it, but yeah, I guess it was exactly the same thing. I was reaching out to people with two goals in mind. The main goal was to try to get exposure. I figured if I could do work for the right person that had enough exposure, that would get me tons of jobs and they would just flood in. And I remember, Chris Golubo, I think that's how you say his name. I'm sorry, Chris, if I'm pronouncing your last name wrong. I remember he had this designer that was doing his websites called Designed by Someone. I can't remember her name anymore. Anyways, she was doing all of his work for him. And I was like, wow, she's got like a really cool site going on. And, you know, she's probably getting tons of jobs, it sounded like, from doing stuff for Chris. And I think that I was thinking, if I can just get like one of these bloggers I look up to let me do their design work, like that is going to open the floodgates of customers and notoriety for me.
And so that kind of planted this seed of, hey, if I start reaching out to some of these people, I might have a lot of opportunity here. And so you did that. And along the way, you ended up in this startup job. And now you're on the other end of that startup job. And you're kind of back to square one, or back to go in Monopoly terms, as you put it. And a year after you emailed this person originally, he reaches back out.
Right.
And you receive this email in your inbox. Do you remember seeing that in your inbox and like thinking what it could represent to you?
Oh, yeah. It was like, it was just the best possible timing. And it just like affirmed for me that like, I had made the right decision in leaving this other job. So the person I'd written a few people that were just my favorite people that I read online. And one of those was Jonathan Mead of, at that time, Illuminated Mind. The site he has now is Paid to Exist. But I had written to him because I just loved his writing. He had gotten pretty popular from writing for Zen Habits. And I had found him through that. And then I started reading his blog. And I always found it really inspirational. And it was pretty unique and cool. And I wrote to him and had asked, you know, hey, if there's ever anything I can do for you in terms of design, let me know. Like, I'll do it for free. Like, I just want to be able to work with you. And then, like, literally a year later, he contacted me and was like, hey, do you want to do like a, it was just like one single image. I think it was just like cover of like a blog post or something like that. Like, he's like, hey, do you want to do this image for me? And I did that for him. And that like literally was where everything started to totally change for me.
Did it feel like that at the time? Did it, when you opened that and you read that and like before you responded to him to say yes, which you obviously did it feel like the kind of moment that could change things? Or was it just kind of what seemed like a simple lucky break shortly after you had left the company?
It seemed like there was a lot of potential in it. It was a small job he was requesting to have done, but this was like the first time where someone that was a hero of sorts to me, you know, someone I looked up to that was doing what I wanted to be doing, had reached back to me and said, yeah, you know, I'd love to have you do this for me. So I had a sense that there was opportunity there and that there could be, but of course there was no guarantees, but I had like a gut feeling, you know, there was like a gut feeling inside that like something good was going to come from this.
So you did that first image for him for a blog post. And that would lead to much more work together. But tell me the story of how you went from making a blog post image for him to really growing that relationship.
Yeah, I think I was just so excited to work with him that I did way more. I think this was a blog image. It's been so long ago. I wish that I remember it for sure. It was something very, very like small, like doing a blog image. And I remember just going way above and beyond because I was just so interested in what he was doing and I so wanted him to like it that I remember getting on the phone and talking to him about it, and we kind of hit it off when we did that, and I delivered him a ton of options and he could tell I put a ton of work into it. If I remember right, like I went out and bought props to photograph and all sorts of stuff. Like I just went crazy on this thing. And I think that he saw that I was really enthusiastic about it. And I think at that moment in time, his business was growing more than it ever had. And so he was in a position where he was trying to expand the business and get like another content creator on. And he had a community manager. And I did that job for him. And then I think I did another small job for him. And then he said, hey, would you ever be interested in doing like a full-time thing with me? And I was like, yeah, like I would love to do that. That would be like the greatest thing ever. So it really started from that. And then I just, of course, was like, yeah, like totally. And then we talked about kind of the different terms of how it would work in terms of payment and what my job roles would be. And I remember like actually having to talk to my wife about it a little bit, because the thing was, he said, well, you'll be doing a lot of design stuff, he said, but you're also going to be doing like some like online marketing stuff. You know, you might be writing some emails, you might be doing some social media stuff. You might be doing some like support stuff or administrative stuff. So I was thinking of myself as a graphic designer, and he was thinking, yeah, you'll do graphic design stuff, but I can't just hire a graphic designer. Like, I'm not that big of a business. So you'd have to be doing other stuff too. And at this point, like, I thought that maybe like I was on the cusp of my own success. And so I remember it being a really hard decision, because it was either one, like, I keep doing what I'm doing because some more clients had started coming in since I started working with him. Like, it had worked that way. I had gotten some exposure, and customers were starting to contact me. And I thought, wow, this might really grow. Like, I might be really close to just making a full-time living doing this on my own. And at that same time, he's asking me to go work for him. So I remember it was a really, really hard decision. But in the end, I decided with my wife, well, there's so much to learn from someone that has been successful at this. It would just be silly to pass up the chance to work so closely with someone that's doing exactly what you originally wished you were doing.
So how long after you left your job as the lead designer did this opportunity come up?
Like 2 weeks to a month. It was really fast.
Wow.
Yeah. The
timing was impeccable.
It was like really great timing, which really reinforced for me that like, I was like, oh, this is like fate or, yeah.
So you took the job with Jonathan. That was kind of the next step there. And what did that feel like? So you went from this kind of unhealthy, stressful job that wasn't serving you as a human. You left it. Quickly thereafter, this guy reaches back out randomly a year after you contact him. And this leads to a couple of projects together and then him offering you a full-time gig. And you're kind of seesawing back and forth on it because maybe your own design work, your kind of freelance stuff could pick up enough to make you a full-time living. But here you are being offered another full-time job, which would obviously prevent that from happening right now.
Right.
But you take the job and you show up. Well, you don't really, I don't know if you actually showed up. I don't know if it was in person or not, but what were kind of the next steps from there? What did that start to feel like, and how did that grow into more?
Yeah, well, you're right. I didn't work like in an office with him. This was all just remote working. So I worked from my apartment. But I remember the week before I started, like officially started working for him, he said, I want you to read all these books. And he had sent me, one of the books was Influence by Barry
Cialdini.
Yeah, thank you. I was going to say, Barry, can you pronounce this guy's name? Influence by Robert, how do you say last name?
Cialdini.
Cialdini. Wow. That's cool. You know how to say that. So like he had me reading books like that. That's the one that really stands out. Or there was another one called Scientific Advertising. I think that's by Claude Hopkins or something like that.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds like you're familiar with these books too. So, you know, like these are like really, really good books on copywriting or I guess marketing psychology. And I was so excited because this is the kind of stuff I've been into my whole life. Like I've always loved like these kind of books. I'd never seen these particular ones, but I was like, man, this is going to be cool. So I read those books and then I started like I bought them all like immediately and like read them and had them all read by the time I started. And I remember the first week I was there, he said, you know, just go in and I don't want you to do any work. I just want you to look at how everything is working and kind of just reverse engineer it and try to get an understanding and a feel for how all this works. And on top of that, we'd met for coffee on Mississippi Avenue in Portland. And he had like basically drawn out essentially like a diagram of how the business worked. It was essentially like a funnel. But I remember like this was like crazy, man. I remember getting access to like the Dropbox and like but WordPress and like everything that made the business run. And my brain literally almost, I didn't literally, but my brain felt like it was going to explode, because all of a sudden it was, I don't even know how to explain it. It was like a curtain had been pulled back, and I was seeing how like an actual online business successfully ran. And all of a sudden realizing that I had no idea how it really ran until then. Like if I had not taken this job with him, I would have like never, ever like been able to have been successful in the ways that I have, because I was so wrong about what was important. Like I was so off. It was ridiculous. And when I saw it, I was like, wow, I can't believe this is actually how like the workings of this kind of thing run. And it was just very illuminating, and it just changed my entire perspective on how to look at starting my own business.
And so at this point, how's the financial side of things looking? You know, you've kind of been through some ups and downs at this point. My guess is that you haven't had enough ups to get completely out of the hole, but what were things looking like at home?
Oh yeah, no, we were like, I mean, we were, like I said, we were buried in debt. Jonathan was very, very generous in how much he paid me, and he offered me bonuses for things that went well. And my hours, I think I'd started at like 20 hours and then it built up to like full time over the course of a couple months, but he paid me really generously. And we were finally at a point where we weren't losing money every month. We weren't going more in debt.
Right.
But still, like, I wasn't, I mean, you know, I was almost any time you're an employee somewhere, unless like you're a lawyer or a doctor or something like that, like you're not going to become, you know, probably a multimillionaire as an employee most places,
right?
unless you own, you know, shares of something or like part of the company. So we were floating along now. And we were slowly, you know, with a spoon digging ourselves out of a 30-foot hole. But I was really happy, and I was like learning a ton, and work didn't feel like work anymore. It felt like fun.
Which was a big contrast to the previous job, which wasn't that far in the rearview mirror at this point.
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I mean too, like I was working from home and making a full-time living doing it. I mean, that a few years earlier seemed like impossible. Like I didn't understand how anybody did it. So yeah, it was pretty amazing.
So eventually working with Jonathan led to you guys starting a new project together.
Yeah.
How did that project come about, and what was it, I guess?
Yeah. So, I think maybe it was like 6 or 9 months into working with Jonathan, my grandfather died. And, little background, I grew up in the Bay Area and moved to Washington State. So my grandfather died, and my grandmother had dementia, and it was just this kind of hard situation for the family, obviously, because my grandfather died, but also because now my grandmother's in her home, but she really can't be by herself. But we're a pretty small family, and so it was like, she doesn't want to be in a nursing home or something like that. Like, no one was really in a position to, you know, have her come live with them. And she had this, you know, beautiful house that she loved down in the Bay Area. Like, literally, like, it was like 5 or 10 blocks from where Steve Jobs built Apple in the garage. And I was like, well, I'm working, you know, remotely anyway. So I said, well, I talked to my wife and said, why don't we just go down there? You know, like it'll be a change. We'll go down there and, you know, I can kind of study more about business because, you know, it's Silicon Valley. There's all sorts of business stuff happening down there. And, I talked to Jonathan about it, and he was like, yeah, man, he's like, go for it. And, I was down there, and I think that because I was in the Bay Area and because there's so much like tech startup stuff happening, like that somehow like turned into us wanting to try to make like a business together. And I couldn't be more specific than that. It was kind of a weird transition, but we decided we wanted to make a business together as opposed to me just working for him. I think part of that was because he really wanted to help me succeed. And he knew that one of my dreams was to own a business. And he said, well, let's try making one together.
That's awesome. So what was the idea for the business? Like, you know, you kind of sat down, strategized about it. What was the early idea?
So the early idea was essentially mixing. It came from this idea. We said, what if you could get access to all your favorite entrepreneurs' Basecamp accounts? So anyone that, a lot of people might be familiar with Basecamp. It's essentially a place where you can organize like projects. It's like project management software. So you have files in there and your to-do lists and all the different things that you would do to make a part of your business run. And we had talked about how, man, if you could look at like successful businesses and see what were in their Basecamp files, like you could probably get kind of like a blueprint for how they were making things succeed. So that led to an idea called Playbook that we made. And essentially what it was we were getting different entrepreneurs and you could get a, you could look in their playbook and it would have like a step-by-step list of things they did to make some part of their business successful. And you would go through these checklists and check those things off and basically follow their path to get success in different aspects of marketing and entrepreneurship for small business owners.
So when y'all came up with this idea, did it feel like you were finally kind of fulfilling this entrepreneurial urge that you had had even before teaming up with Jonathan?
Yeah. I felt like my ship had arrived. Like I was down in the Bay Area. I had taken some like the community education classes at Stanford, which although they're just community education ones, they still have the same teachers that you have, you know, whether you, when you go to the normal daytime school there. So like I was doing that and then that had gotten me hooked up with different people that went to Stanford that were doing different like startups and I had done some work for them. And yeah, like I felt like we were really onto something and I felt like my dreams were coming true. And at the same time, we had gotten pregnant with our first daughter. And so I was like, well, this is perfect. Like I'm starting this startup. It's not making money yet, but it's going to be making like a ton of money soon. This is a really great idea. I'm working with someone with experience. So it's going to be perfect. Like right when my daughter is born, like we had timed it out, made a timeline. I was like, right as my daughter's being born, like basically like money is going to start like just like waterfalling on top of me was what I imagined.
So if that was what you imagined, what actually happened?
What actually happened was I learned a lesson that you probably experienced. So anything, any project you try to do, you'd quickly discover, at least I have, ends up taking like 3 to 10 times as long as you anticipated. And this was no exception. So it was way harder to find developers to try to get this project off the ground. We had to do a kickstarting, or we didn't use Kickstarter. We used Indiegogo to like raise like, I think like $12,000 or $13,000. We tested like interfaces to try to get the idea going. Like then we had to recruit different like entrepreneurs to make like the thing that, you know, the actual courses in Playbook. And it just became this like time consuming like thing where it was just like roadblock after roadblock. And you know, my wife is getting closer and closer to giving birth to our daughter. And so that's like a constant reminder that money needs to start coming in and it's not coming in. And as it approaches, I'm starting to realize this isn't making any money. I thought it would by now. And as more and more challenges came up, I started to realize maybe this will never make money. And that was hard because we had agreed to work on it together. So it wasn't like it was me by myself and I could say, let's just stop. I had made a commitment to Jonathan, who is like one of my best friends. And I wanted to respect that and I wanted to see the idea out. So we just kept pushing, but it was getting scary because it was becoming really clear it was not going to be as easy as we thought.
So you had a daughter on the way and the due date's getting closer and closer. And that imagined reality of, you know, money waterfalls coming down on top of you
right,
is turning into a concern over whether this thing would ever actually make money. And now you're in a partnership with, you know, a guy you really respect and you really enjoy working with, which I'm sure many people can relate to. And you're starting to realize it doesn't matter how much I love this partnership or how much we love this idea. If it doesn't make money, I got to find another way to provide for my family. You know, I'm about to have a kid.
Right. Yep.
So what did you start to do from there? Was there a conversation you had with Jonathan to tell him that you might have to move on? Or did you just start working on some things on the side? Or how did that work?
No, I learned when I was playing, I played in bands like almost my whole life since high school until I was like around 27. And I was in a band for many years, and this band had made a lot of albums together. We had done a lot of stuff, and I had learned a really valuable lesson from being in the band. And that lesson was you follow through on stuff. Like, you don't stop in the middle of things and then pick up and then go on to another idea. Like, you see things through for the most part. So that had really become ingrained in me, that something that I, in my opinion, stops a lot of people from succeeding is that they stop things way too early, and then they start something new and they get into this like toxic cycle of never actually shipping something.
Right.
To use Seth Godin's words. So I felt like Playbook wasn't like live yet. So I was like, at this point, I was like, there's no way I'm quitting this. Like, I owe it to myself and I owe it to Jonathan and I owe it to the people that have, you know, helped us to fund this, to get this launched and make it live. Even though it's starting to feel like I'm trying to like push a boulder up like a mountain. So I kept working on it, but I realized I'm not going to make enough money to even pay for diapers by the time this baby is born. So I started thinking, okay, well, I had just discovered a site called Creative Market, which is a marketplace for graphic designers to sell like Photoshop files and Illustrator files and things like that. And this site was brand new at this point. It had been out less than a year, and I would go there and look at different products and occasionally buy one. And I decided, okay, I need to do something. Like, I was desperate. I was totally desperate, literally thinking I need diaper money because this baby is going to be born like any like week now. I mean, it was getting scary, you know. I was about to become a dad. And so anyways, I started waking up like 2 to 3 hours early every morning and making products to put onto Creative Market. And that was the only way to do it, because I was committed to working on this startup and I wanted to honor that. So the only time I had was super early in the morning. And that's how like the little seedling of Retro Supply got started.
Which is such a cool story. You know, I think in some ways the way Retro Supply got started is the way we'd recommend trying to start a business to begin with, you know. You've got this big project, this big bet you've made, kind of betting the farm a little bit on Playbook.
Yeah.
And there's a lot going on there. And meanwhile, you're spending an hour or two every morning making these design products for Creative Market. And that starts to become something more, right?
Yep. So, yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, no, just how long were you working on these little products each morning before you posted one to Creative Market?
The first one was a set of logos. It was like, logos were really popular on Creative Market that time. Like, the best selling guy on there was doing logo packs. So I said, okay, well, I'll try doing, you know, logo packs. I think I can, you know, compete with what this person is doing. So I remember I was really afraid. Like, I was afraid once I put something up that like all these designers that were coming to the site would be like, hey man, you know, like stop putting stuff up for sale. Like, you're not good enough and you know, you suck. And like, what makes you think you can put stuff up? So I was really afraid. So like, it took me a week to put my first product up, and it was just 6 logos, which like I just kept tweaking. And really what I was doing was I was just procrastinating because I was afraid to put it up. So the first product took like a week to put up, and I had to work a ton. And then after that, I pretty much made a goal that whatever, no matter what, I'm going to put a product up every single week. And that's what I did. So I put up a logo pack and it sold like, I think I made, I don't know, like maybe like $80 like over the course of that week, which was really exciting, right? Like, you know, I'm sure you've had the experience of making like your first, you know, dollars online. Those are some of the most exciting dollars you will ever make online, is those first ones.
For sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was really exciting. It was like just amazing. And I was like, at this point I had no big expectations for this. I just thought, hey, maybe I can, you know, if I'm lucky, like if I'm really, really good, like maybe I'll get it up to like a couple $100 a month. So, but I thought, but maybe if I just keep putting up products, like, and I'm just the guy that keeps working really hard on it, maybe I'll eventually have so many products that like it'll do really well. So every week I was putting up a product, and I think at the end of the first month I'd made like $800, which was crazy. Like, that was crazy to me. Like, $800 was, and this is not like a joke. Like, this was like $800 was life-changing money. To make an extra $800 a month was huge.
Right.
It really is. It can be life-changing for someone to make that much more. So for me, it was amazing. And then none of them were doing super great though. Like, they were trickling in money, and I finally decided, like, I kind of got this idea where I said to myself, I'm going to try making a product that's the product that I wish people would put up on Creative Market, but no one does. Because I always felt like, man, all these designers are putting products up on Creative Market, but it's funny because they sure don't package them very good considering they're graphic designers, is what I was thinking. Like, they put them up almost as an afterthought. So I thought, I'm going to make like a product that looks like so good it like could be on like a shelf in like a brick and mortar retail store. And I made that product, and I made like, you know, the best screen, the best like preview images I could. I made the product just really stunning looking, and it made a really compelling effect that was time saving. And this is when I started to pull, like, I was slowly pulling out all these skills I'd learned working with Jonathan. And I was, this is where like things like the copywriting books I'd read and scientific advertising came into play. So I knew certain things were helpful in selling things. So not only was I making the product that I had always dreamed of, but I was doing things like, for instance, starting with a compelling headline, talking about benefits as opposed to features, using social proof, using before and after images, offering, you know, things to make people more comfortable, like saying, hey, I'll get back to you like same day, oftentimes within an hour or two. I was just doing everything I could that I had learned that is effective in getting people to buy. And I was just crazily like injecting that into what I was doing. So I got this product out, and then I went to, you know, I went to bed, woke up the next morning, and just like I did every morning, I woke up and started working on my next product. And this is like literally like a moment in my life that was like, just like, I'll never forget this. I had my iPhone next to me, and I'm working, and all of a sudden my iPhone like pings that I got like an email, and I look, and it was that product I made. Someone had bought it. So that happens every time someone buys a product. So I was like, oh, that's great. And then it pings again, and then it pings again. And then pretty soon it's like ding 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 ding, like a what is it, like a slot machine when you win, right?
Right.
Like, it's just like going crazy, and every time it does this, it's someone buying the product, and I'm making, I think, like $8 on each transaction. I literally pack up my bag and start running home, because like I wanted to get home to my wife before it stopped doing that, so I could show her the phone ringing. Because I was just feeling like, this is so crazy. Like, I mean, I was literally in awe. So I ran home with my, like, you know, little side bag with my computer in it, looking like an idiot running down the street. And I get home, and I pull the phone out, and she's still in bed. And I'm like, do you hear that? And she's like, yeah. And I was like, every one of those beeps is $8 in our bank account. And it did that all day, not quite as fast as it was then, but by the end of the day I had made like $1,400, and that was like crazy money to me. I mean, I didn't even know anyone who had made $1,400 in a day. Well, other than I guess Jonathan at that point, and some people I met at conferences that I didn't know super well. But that was kind of like the magic moment for that business, when I realized there's so much more that this could be.
Right. So this came out of you spending an hour or two each morning making these products, putting them out there. But it wasn't just magic that all of a sudden one of them took off. You got some promotion from that, right? So tell me the story of that. Like, how did more people find out about this one?
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely the product was a big part of it, but even bigger than that was getting it in front of a large audience. So Creative Market was new, but they're really sophisticated in their marketing and their emails. So they had a list of I don't know what it was at the time. I want to say it was over 100,000 subscribers. Now it's way more. It might have been even up close to 200,000. I don't know. But it was a huge amount of subscribers they had. So I got featured in their newsletter. And that went out to however many people. It was a massive, massive, massive amount of people. And I was the leading product that day because I had, you know, made it look fantastic. And a large part of how they chose products, at least from my experience or from my perspective, was how it looked. When they put this, you know, newsletter showing you the newest, best products that week, they were showing you the ones that were the coolest, but that often meant they had the best images, preview images to go with them. Mm.
That's awesome. So that work you had put in early on to make this product what you hoped to find on places like Creative Market paid off.
Oh, yeah, it totally did. And I kind of had a hint at Mike because I remember when I first posted it the night before it was put into the email newsletter. So you could tell that like they thought it was cool because I had, I think, posted it live on the site on Tuesday evening, like around like 3 or 4. And I remember getting like a tweet or maybe even like an email from the CEO, and he was like, dude, he was like, this product is killer, you know, something to that effect. Like, he was like, this is awesome.
Right.
And I was like, whoa, thanks. That's pretty neat, you know, but they're really supportive like that. And he had said things like that before. So I appreciated it, but I didn't know that that necessarily meant it would be in the newsletter. And then the next day, of course, it led in the newsletter. And so they were like a huge part of that initial success.
So here you are, you know, you're still working on Playbook, and you've been working on this not really side project. I mean, it was a side project, but it wasn't intended to be a thing that was going to take over your full-time living. It was more just like, well, Playbook isn't working yet. I'm having a daughter. You know, I need to make some money. This is a great way to use my skills to do that.
Yeah, it was diaper money. That's all I was thinking.
But now you've made $1,400 in a day.
Right.
When, or was there a moment when you realized that you might be building the thing that would become your full-time living?
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously making that much money in a day, like, was a positive sign that people liked what I was doing. And this is where like having like some experience from people that are ahead of you is so valuable. Because people were liking this product, I realized here's what most people do on Creative Market. They put a product out. If it's featured, they get a boost of sales that day, and that's the end of it, right? Like, then it will slowly taper off, right? And it will kind of sell, but it tapers off. But I realized you've got to, like, this is your chance to, like, build. You need to build relationships with these customers that bought by emailing them back and thanking them and doing something to really make yourself stand out in their minds. And I also knew pretty quickly that I needed to start capturing people's email addresses because – and that's something that I don't think I realized the power of before working for someone else. But to go back to what you were saying, when I really realized this was going to be a serious business was when at the end of that month, this is 2 months into putting products on Creative Market. At the end of the second month, I had made, I think, somewhere between $15,000 and $17,000.
Wow.
Which is more than I had made all the previous, maybe not all the previous year, but more than I had made a lot of years of my life at a job. So at that point, I was like, okay, this is something that you need to start really focusing on and really start using these marketing skills you've learned.
Right. So at some point during this process, you decided to really kind of niche down and build a brand around this idea of retro design. Tell me the story of how that happened.
Yeah, well, so I had, when I was working on with Jonathan, he had originally had a site called Illuminated Mind, and then he wanted to rebrand it as Paid to Exist. And that's actually, oh man, I'm sorry, I'm drawing a blank here. I'm trying to, you're going to edit this, right?
Yeah.
Okay, Chase Reeves. I was like, how stupid. Like, I just like, of course I know Chase's name. Anyways, I had worked with Chase Reeves on the Paid to Exist rebrand. He'd done the web design, which he's obviously amazing at. And I had done like the logo and like some different elements for the site. And I was really into like the whole retro look, almost like a hipster look. So I had become really good at this because like we were doing this for Paid to Exist all over the place. Like everything had this certain aesthetic to it. And because of that, like, I'd learned a lot about kind of like superficially about retro design. But then when I moved down to live with my grandma, my grandfather passed away, they had all sorts of retro stuff because they're you know, old. Right, so there's like all sorts. Right. It was just stuff they'd gathered. So there's all this stuff from like mid-century 1950s America, you know, like old Clorox boxes and stuff like that. So I was really starting to get into this stuff. I love this aesthetic. And pretty much from the beginning, when I started this whole thing on Creative Market, I was trying to do what was easiest for me. And because I was making stuff like this all the time for Paid to Exist, it was really easy to make this stuff fast because it was almost brainless because I was doing it so much for that business. So I had naturally started progressing down that path. It was selling well and I really enjoyed it. And I knew from Fizzle, this is where like Fizzle had just started like a little bit before I had moved down there. And I had watched all the initial first courses. And one stood out to me more than anything. And it was the one that Corbett had done where he talked about differentiation.
Yep.
And it was like one of the first courses on there. And I remember watching that like over and over again. And he had talked about, you know, like you need to make yourself stand out in your customers' minds. So when they leave, like it's impossible to forget you. And you do that by like not catering to everyone, but by catering to like very specific people. And I remember his example he used was Saddleback Leather. Mm-hmm. And I remember like going to their site and looking at it. And so that all went through my mind when I was doing Retro Supply. I said, I am going to put all my chips onto doing this retro thing. And I was literally thinking exactly of his advice as I did that. So I decided I am going to be different than everyone else. I'm not going to, you know, follow, you know, well, this week this thing does good on Creative Market. This week this thing does good. I said I am going to commit to this retro thing because I know there's a lot of people that like retro. And I am going to be the person that dominates in that one small area by fully committing. And as a funny side note, I discovered those Saddleback leather bags from Corbett, and he was right. They did a great job differentiating themselves. And once I had made a certain amount of money, my first like gift I bought for myself was a Saddleback leather bag. So it's actually awesome. A constant reminder of Corbett whenever I put it on.
Nice. So you've kind of started this thing that starts to bubble up with some energy. It's making some money, not a little bit of money. I mean, that's more money than many people will make in a given month in their life. And now you're kind of focusing in. You're saying, all right, retro design is going to be my thing. You know, I've got all of these outside sources of inspiration. I know differentiation is important. So I'm going to go in on retro design here as my kind of unifying theme. So if we fast forward exactly. A little bit, you ended up at one point with more than half of the products on the Creative Market homepage being yours. So how'd you go from you know, kind of starting off and having this hit product to building into kind of a force on that third party platform?
Yeah. So, obviously you have followers on Creative Market. So once that one did really well, and at that point it was probably, I mean, this was a new market. So it was probably one of the most, like eye-catching products at that time on Creative Market. And so I got a large following from that. And the advantage of a following on Creative Market is that anytime you make a product, it's automatically featured to people that follow you every Sunday. So that was helpful. But here's the really like useful thing that I did that I don't think anybody else was really doing. So since I had niched down, this had actually opened up like a really cool opportunity for me. I could go look at like other products like on other sites that were doing well, that were like design products. And I could like look at, so I would just go look for stunning effects, like ones that I thought were really, really cool. And then I would just put the lens on it like this. What if this was this effect, but retro? So I would just go find best-selling products and then I would essentially give it a Retro Supply flavor. So I would like create my own version of a product like that, except for it would be very, very catered towards that niche that I had decided to commit to. And because of that, like I was able to make a lot of successful products because I already knew that people wanted them because people were buying the more generic version that someone else had put out.
Right.
And then I was just putting out a more niched version, but I knew that that's, does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. What I'm saying? It's a great strategy.
Yeah. Yeah. So basically I was just putting like retro flavor on things that are, I already knew were proven to sell.
So in that second and month, you made, you know, a bunch of money, $12,000 to $15,000, somewhere in that range.
Yep.
Did that continue to happen each month thereafter, or was there kind of like a drop off and then a ramp up?
No, that continued to happen. And the reason was because I was every week releasing a product. I think the first year of the business, I released something like 45 products, and there's, you know, 52 weeks in a year. Right. So almost every single week I was releasing a product. So I was becoming someone where I remember every Tuesday I'd release a product, and I remember people telling me like, yeah, I look forward to Tuesdays because your products come out. So I was also training people to expect to see a product from me every Tuesday. And I think that I was making Creative Market, anticipate a product from me every Tuesday. And they knew they could count on me to make, you know, a product that I spent all week investing massive amounts of time in. So I got featured a lot.
Right.
So this became like this snowball where like I had more and more products, and anytime a product was featured, people would buy that. And then that would lead them down the rabbit hole of my other products, and they'd buy more products. So every month it was growing. And at the same time, like within, I think by the end of 2 months of having Retro Supply, I knew that I needed to build an email list and I needed my own platform, because I had just heard too many stories of people making businesses and then something happens to that platform and they lose everything. So I love Creative Market. I've met the CEO. I've met all the employees there. I've been to their home offices. I love these guys. They're amazing. They have an awesome business and they really care about designers. But I also have, you know, at this point, a little girl and my wife, and I'm trying, you know, my best to take care of them. And I can't just count on Creative Market because who knows what will happen. So at the same time that I'm making new products for Creative Market, I had made a Shopify store and I had started putting my products on my own Shopify store. And at the same time, I was building my email list by offering a really great offer, which was 9 best-selling products for free when you sign up for my email list. And I was driving traffic also through my bio on Creative Market. So it would say like lots of people in their bio would say something like this. I'm a designer from Austin, Texas that loves to drink coffee. And I always thought that was like, I was like, man, this is such a valuable piece of real estate on Creative Market. Like you can't just put something like that. So instead, like I put get 9 best-selling retro products free here. And then I put a bit.ly link to my site with an email opt-in.
That's awesome. So that was how you started funneling people over to your platform, not necessarily to steal them from Creative Market, but to build your own asset.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think of it like, yeah, I definitely don't think of it as stealing them. I feel this way. People can choose to buy from me or for Creative Market, and Creative Market obviously takes a cut, and I am so happy to give them that cut because these people have been such an amazing partner. I just knew that I couldn't just rely on another person or company to be my sole income. And I would have done that with anyone, you know. So I love them and I put tons of stuff on there and I'm happy to support them every way I can. But I just knew I had to have like my own platform as well.
Right. So somewhere along this timeline, obviously, it was time to move on from Playbook because you had this growing company on your hands, right?
Right.
When did that happen and how did that feel?
I think that... Well, Jonathan had seen that like I had had success with that, and he also, of course, knew I had my daughter had been born and stuff. And we both had realized that it was seeming way harder than it should be. And we did get it launched, and it did, and it was profitable in the sense that if you don't put a time value or a money value on our hours, it was making a profit.
Right.
If you count paying us, it was not profitable. And it was a grind, you know, it was like a serious grind to get this stuff out. So, I think that at the same time we got on a call one day and it was like, we both were just ready to say uncle. So he was like, you know, I think it might be time to let this go. Like, we gave it a really good try, and I think he also felt like, you know, I know you, this is working really well for you. I've got a business that is doing well for me. This might be a time for us to just like let this go. We've given it all we can and it just didn't work.
And what'd you say to him?
I said, I'm so glad you feel that way. I feel the same way. That was the amazing thing about Jonathan. We're still great friends, and he's always just been so supportive. And I've always like admired the fact that he always puts, I think, personal relationships above business. So it made it actually really easy. It was a pretty painless process. It was sad to let it go, but we learned a lot. If we did it again, it might have been more successful, but we just did a lot of foolish things in hindsight as we built it.
Yeah, yeah. So do you remember how long your retro supply company had been running by the time you shut down Playbook?
Yeah, it was probably like 5 months.
Okay.
4 or 5 months.
So enough time where you were kind of comfortable that it was working, you know, this other company, and you were okay letting it go, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And Playbook wasn't working. I mean,
right.
It was eating up, you know, 40 hours a week that I was basically making $0 on. So,
and meanwhile, you're making thousands of dollars from much less time every week.
Exactly. So I was like, okay, I can double down on what's actually working. And that's what I've essentially done for the past couple of years.
So here we are in present day, March 2016, as of this recording. So what's happening in your business now?
Yeah, so now I've been really loyal to Creative Market. I sell on Creative Market and one other site, and then I have my own site, retrosupply.co. I've built my list for Retro Supply to 15,000. It's like just under 15,000 right now, but it's a really engaged audience. I think the open rates are around 35 to 40%, which is a pretty strong open rate for that size list, from my understanding. And I now have scaled the business. So I've had an assistant work for me that does support and helps with products. I have someone that I have on retainer that makes fonts. I've scaled it so I don't have to do nearly as much work on making the products, although I definitely do get involved with that. Another strategic decision we made was to start. So the thing is, if you're a designer, you'll probably relate to this. Like, a lot of the people selling products on places like Creative Market are not design celebrities, for lack of a better word. They're designers you've never heard of. And I always thought a lot of people would love to have products from these really well-known designers that they admire. But those people don't put out products because they're super busy making, you know, design work for clients. So one strategic decision I made was to start partnering with these great designers and saying, you make a product with me and I will do all the promotion and marketing of it and packaging of it. And so I've been able to deliver some products that would never, ever come out from these designers if it wasn't for that. So yeah, today it's doing really good. I've paid off all my debt. I was able to pay off all of that debt that we had accrued in one single payment, which was like one of the best feelings of my life. Yeah. And it's so funny because once you know how it goes, like once you pay the credit card company off, all of a sudden, like they're your best friend and they want to give you tons of credit.
Of course.
Yeah, but before that, they're not there for you. But anyways, it felt great to pay that off. We've been able to buy our dream house out in the country in Washington State. It's it's not a mansion or something, but for me, it's like amazing. It's this beautiful home. We have no debt. I'm able to stay home. And, you know, last year we traveled to Florence, Italy, and we rented an apartment for 45 days. And I just worked from there and we kind of pretended like we were, you know, Italians for 45 days. So it's been amazing. It really has. I mean, it's like anything, it's hard at times and it can be stressful at times, but, it's very fulfilling and I'm just thrilled with it. And it's also given me a chance to, I've actually built it out into something else where I go to design conferences and, do talks on something called Passive Income for Designers. So I have like a podcast on that where I talk about kind of how I did it, how I built Retro Supply. And then I go to these conferences and do workshops where I essentially help designers to do the same thing, because this is a surprisingly common problem for designers, even really, really successful ones in terms of how well people know them. So many designers like just do not know basic marketing skills to help them to like grow side incomes. Right. So I've been helping to teach designers to do that, and that's gotten a good response too.
That's awesome. So when you think back to that guy working at the bank right out of college, taking the bank CEO to lunch, would you have guessed that he would one day be running this business, this Retro Supply company?
No. Like, you know, I mean, before, like, at this point, the business, I mean, it varies, but it typically does around 20, I don't know, maybe like $20,000 to $25,000 a month, which even today, like sometimes like I can't believe that. So no, I would have never expected that. Like I would have never expected to have had as many opportunities as I've had, or have seen it got so big. I mean, back when I was working at the bank, if I had made $30,000 a year working for myself, I would have considered myself a huge success. So this seems almost like a dream. It's really crazy.
If you could go back and tell that young guy what was coming down the pike for him over time, would you even give him a warning?
No, I definitely wouldn't. And you know, that's the thing is like, I think like people want things to happen or sometimes we think maybe we wish we could know. But the thing is like, I think that if you knew what was going to happen, you wouldn't do it. Like, I think I thought there was like some sort of secret to being successful at doing this kind of stuff. And there is, I mean, there's, you can definitely do things to put things in your favor. You know, for instance, I have a friend that's like a member of Fizzle that's also started like a huge business that's done really, really well in the design field. And doing things like being around other entrepreneurs and you know, taking training and things like that is a very wise thing to do. And it's going to put the odds more in your favor. But yeah, a lot of people will be like, wow, like, do you feel like you got really lucky? And I'm like, yeah, I got lucky, but it's because I was unlucky so much that finally one time I got lucky.
Right.
And then when I did, I had all the skills I needed to use that to build it into something. So you want to be ready when you finally get lucky. And you do that by, you know, taking training and listening to interviews and reading books and practicing. So when that opportunity comes, you're ready for it.
So, you know, we can probably say that the unhappiest Dustin was maybe, or most stressed, was in that job as lead designer for that startup. And maybe the low point or a scary point was having started Playbook, getting ready to have your first child, being in a ton of debt still, and not really knowing how all the math was going to work out. If you think about someone in a similar position, you know, they've got these entrepreneurial dreams, maybe they're about to have their first kid, maybe they're in a bunch of debt. What kind of advice would you share with them as they're going through those similar struggles?
Man, yeah, you know, it's hard because when you have a child coming or you have a child, it puts a whole new weight on you because if you fail, you're failing. It's hard not to associate that failure with being a good parent or being a good provider. So I would never like tell anyone, just go for it and do it. Like that's a personal decision you have to make. I will say this, like, I think that the rewards of going for it are huge and the payoffs are gigantic and you don't have to be a genius. Like you don't have to be super smart to be successful at this kind of thing. But what you do need to do is you need to go out there and release things. So like maybe you're not ready right now. Like maybe you feel like you don't have all the skills. The best thing you could do is put products out that are not perfect, but they're the best you can do. Start building an email list. Start sending emails to the little email list that you do build and practice, you know, copywriting, practice like building a funnel, practice releasing products. Like it's not going to, you have to do it really poorly for a while before you'll do it well. And I think that's the most likely thing to improve your odds of success.
So when you look at your business today, How's that feel?
Feels fantastic. I mean, I'm really proud of it. I have more freedom than I ever dreamed I would have. And I think what's really exciting is once you've succeeded once in to some degree, it's much easier to succeed again in something else. For instance, like I'm, you know, now doing the passive income for designers thing. That has been much easier to get going because of the success I've had from Retro Supply. So I guess I would just say, like, even if like you're busting your butt now, like it does get easier as you go because you build momentum and credibility, and that makes it an experience, and that makes it take less effort and time to recreate success again and again. But yeah, to answer your question, I feel awesome. I feel great about it.
As you should. Awesome, dude. That was great. Perfect. Exactly what I was hoping for. And I think we got you off in enough time to take a bathroom break and hop on your meeting.
Yeah, exactly. It should be totally fine. And I don't know if you've already done like a lot of these already, but if you need like to get back on or something because like you realize we missed something or there's something you'd really want to go in more detail, just let me know and we can hop on and make sure you have everything you need to make a good episode.
Yeah, awesome. I really appreciate that. I'm recording all of them between now and the end of March, and then I'm going to go into deep dive editing, scripting mode, and I'll send you the final file before it goes live. And if I have anything I want to follow up on, I'll definitely reach out.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks again for interviewing me. It was fun, and it's an honor to actually be on your guys' show. It's super neat, so thanks, man.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate it, Dustin.
Okay, talk to you later.
Talk to you soon, man.